You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty.
I, Gerald R. Ford, do grant.
The other passengers there reluctantly gave up their seats, but I refused.
The young man makes up his mind to work. There's no limit to what he can do.
This is truly the next chapter in General Motors' recovery and turnaround.
You're living at a time of extremism, a time of revolution.
Tomorrow marks the ugly anniversary of one of the worst mass killings in United States history. No, not the massacres that happened at Virginia Tech or Sandy Hook, but rather the massacre that happened in the small rural town of Bath, Michigan, right near Lansing. By day's end, on May 18th, 1927, 38 elementary school children and 6 adults were dead and nearly 60 others injured. Here now to remember this very dark chapter in Michigan history is Rachel Clark with the Michigan History Center and Arnie Bernstein. His book is Bath Massacre, America's First School Bombing. Welcome, both of you, to Stateside.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rachel, it seems that this awful event has kind of slipped way back in the sands of time. I mean, when we have the news stories that follow tragedies like Sandy Hook, it's rarely, if ever, mentioned. Why do you think it has been so forgotten?
I think part of that was due to the community itself. Bath worked very, very hard after the events of that horrible spring day to sort of try to forget and not necessarily push it aside, but to not necessarily keep reliving it. They worked very diligently to remove the school very quickly, to bury their dead very quickly, and worked very hard to remove any actual signs of Andrew Kehoe himself. So I think that was part of it. It was just too painful to keep it in everybody's view at the time.
Yes, and sands of time do have an effect. Arnie, this is a very, very weighty topic. But let's start at the very beginning with the murderer, Andrew Philip Kehoe. What were his early years like, and how is it he came to live in Bath?
Kehoe was a real enigma. His upbringing included a father who had remarried a woman who was young enough to be Kehoe's sister. He was trained in electricity, in how to harness electricity, which was a relatively new technology at the time in the late 1800s. He was in St. Louis when he was studying and was zapped and put in a coma for about 2 weeks. Did this have an effect on him? Hard to say. There was a terrible accident where his stepmother, who Kehoe had a contentious relationship, was killed when the oven exploded on her. Kehoe's behavior was quite odd afterward. He went to the neighbor next door and asked if she had a phone. He said, well, Franny's been burned. Can I use your phone? And by the way, call a priest. Did Kehoe set the explosive to go off? He certainly had the technical know-how, but there's no way of knowing one way or other. It's often been speculated that he did do this. And he married Nellie Price, who was the niece of a prominent politician in the Lansing-Bath area, and they moved to her childhood home in Bath.
So that brought him to Bath, and he became involved in Bath schools?
Yes. They had no children, but he felt if his taxes were going to pay for the school, he had the right to be a member of the school board, and he certainly was within his rights and was appointed treasurer of the school board. His books were meticulous when it came to balancing the checks, balancing the money. But he often got into arguments with Emory Hike, who was the superintendent of the school system in Bath. If things weren't going Kehoe's way during a board meeting, he would demand that the board meeting come to an end and he would leave.
Not a way to make friends.
No. I've worked in education, you know, for a long time. This is not unusual for school board meetings. It happens. There are often contentious personalities involved. So there was really nothing in that behavior that would suggest that Kehoe was capable of what he did.
So, Rachel, after serving a few years on the Bath School Board, Kehoe was appointed temporarily as clerk for Bath in 1925, and then he was defeated in the spring election in 1926. Was that the time people began noticing some odd behavior by Kehoe?
Yes, his behavior, he seems a little more negative, a little more bleak. And they also start to notice he is purchasing more and more explosives, some from Lansing, some from the local dealerships. So there are a few things, but that's not unusual for a farmer. Back in the 20s, you have rocks, you have stumps. Other farmers would go to him for advice or even for explosive materials to help remove stumps from their farms or whatever's in the middle of their land they need removed. So in hindsight, they sort of looked back as unusual behaviors at the time. It was sort of strange, but not necessarily anything that stood out.
Arnie Bernstein, take us to May 18th, 1927. How did that day begin in Bath?
The day began with the boiler not working at the school. He had access to the school because he was a handyman. He knew how to fix things. And because he was on the Board of Trustees, he had a key. He could get in, come and go as his will. He was called in to take a look at the boiler. And he was really flustered and didn't want to work on it and finally just up and left. Shortly thereafter, there was a massive explosion. Now, people thought the boiler had blown up. The school itself, the north wing of the school, came down. Basically, the building collapsed. The second story fell on top of the first story. Meanwhile, at about the same time, Kehoe's farm started ablaze. People had no idea what was going on. They saw some sort of incredible disaster had happened at the school, and Kehoe's farm was purely coincidence. Kehoe drove up to the school in his truck. Now, before he left his farm, a couple of his neighbors were there. They wanted to know what was going on, and he said, "Boys, you're my friends. You better get out of here. You better go down to the school." And he drove off to the school. Now, before he pulled up, he tipped his hat to a child who was crossing the street, running from the scene. And then he drove up to the front of the school, which was just devastation. There was triage in front of the school. There was a morgue that was slowly growing. People were literally clawing with their hands trying to get the kids out of there. They didn't have heavy tools. Houses were turning into, you know, hospitals. It was just absolute chaos. And when Keel pulled up, he confronted Emery Hike. Hike saw him and said, "We need your truck. We need to go get ladders. We need to go get ropes." Keel looked at him and said, "Okay, I'll take you with me." And Hike got a look of horror on his face and said, "You know something about this, don't you?"
Oh, interesting that he just pulled a vibe out of that.
He just knew, gut feeling, absolute horror in his face. And at that point, Kehoe blew up his truck and taking both him and Hike, the two of them were just blown to pieces. And other people were hit by the debris. He had packed the cab of his truck with old nails, old implements, rusty screws, things like that. And the shrapnel killed a couple of other people and wounded many others.
Wow. And then back to the farm. Tell us, what was on the sign that was found afterward at Kehoe's farm?
There was a sign found lashed to his farm. Stenciled said, "Criminals are made, not born." In other words, you made me do this.
Oof. Were there signs later in the day that investigators realized the day could have been even worse?
Yes. They estimated that about 100 pounds of dynamite had gone off under the north wing of the school that had collapsed. But as they did investigation, they saw that there was massive wiring under the main part of the school, and they found another 500 pounds of dynamite and a World War I surplus explosive called pyrrhotol. Had it all gone off, Bath would have been wiped off the map. 600 pounds of dynamite would have been a devastating explosion beyond, of course, the devastation that, you know, of the children who died that day.
Wow, wow. What was the reaction nationally in the days that followed?
Well, initially, there was an outpouring, and people would send money, send, you know, all kinds of help to Bath. And then 3 days afterwards, after the bombing, Charles Lindbergh took off for Paris, and suddenly Bath was no longer a story. Keep in mind, this is the days before CNN and Internet, and we had mass coverage, but it was largely pushed off the front page. Of course, Bath was isolated at the time. They didn't even have electricity. Electricity was being strung into Bath that day, the day the explosion happened. Some places had generators. The school had a generator for electricity. Kehoe had a generator for electricity. But because it was so isolated, you know, the story was, I won't say forgotten, but it was put aside because the country and the world went Lindy happy. And I think in a way that was probably the best thing that could have happened, because it gave the people time and space to mourn.
That does make sense. Rachel, the Michigan History Center has a pretty amazing artifact from the Bath Massacre. Tell us what that is.
We do. Shortly after the bombing, one of the school board members and also a blacksmith in town donated the watch that Andrew Kehoe was wearing at the time that he blew up his car. So the Michigan History Center has that watch. It is just a regular old pocket watch. The hour hand is missing, but the minute hand sets at 13 minutes after the hour, which was purportedly when Andrew Kehoe blew up his truck. I don't know if it froze at that minute, if somebody set it to that minute after the fact, but that's how we received it. So the Michigan History Center, the museum rather, has had that artifact since about a month after the bombing.
Rachel, what about motive? Was Andrew Kehoe the 1920s version of what we call today a lone wolf?
I don't know that I would say that. Andrew Kehoe clearly was mentally ill. I don't want to say it's a simple answer, but that is the case. When the town was sort of reviewing what happened, a lot of the blame went to the consolidation of schools. Andrew Kehoe's farm was actually in foreclosure, and he was very upset at the fact that he had to pay taxes to build this large school in town as opposed to paying for the smaller country schools. And so he did sort of rail on about the taxes and how it was hurting his farm. So that is sort of the explanation that people gave. But the reality is he was mentally ill, and he actually acted out on one of the worst disasters in our nation's history.
Arnie Bernstein, as the one who wrote the book, Bath Massacre, America's First School Bombing, anything you want to add or anything you want us to understand about what it was that happened that day?
Well, I think the most important lesson that we can get out of Bath is, yes, there was this horrible devastation, and a man who epitomized evil just took out his internal rage, whatever motivated him, on a whole generation of children. But what came out of it was people turning to each other. And it's the kind of thing we saw after 9/11, after Sandy Hook, after any huge, terrible thing like this. People came together, community came together as a whole, and they worked with themselves and help that arrived from other places. I can't say it's healing, but they helped each other. It was out of great horror, out of great evil, came something really beautiful, that people rely on each other, and that could not be wiped out by Kehoe.
Tomorrow, marking the ugly anniversary of one of the worst mass killings in U.S. history, we've been speaking with the Michigan History Center's Rachel Clark and with Arnie Bernstein. His book is Bath Massacre, America's First School Bombing. Thank you so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.